March 1947. The SS Marine Shark, a refurbished Army transport vessel, on another trip across the Atlantic Ocean. Among the hundreds of European refugees on board were Aaron and Lisa Derman.
Now, if you would like to find out what kind of ride we had with it,
it was a real hard small boat
they gave us, and a boat with no facilities, no, the conditions were not too pleasant, with bunks, and it was so stormy. And all of us were sick, and Lisa was sick.
I was deathly ill for 7 days. The women were separated from the men, and most of the women in my cabin were Italian wives that were joining their husbands. And when the boat, when it was so rough on the sea, everybody went down to pray. I was so sick. I have not been able to go down to pray. So they screamed at me that I am anti-Christian and I am going to bring down the boat. And they really tried to drag me down. I was so sick and I wished death on myself. I say, after all of this that I went through in life, now this, when will it ever end? When will it ever end?
6 years earlier, in 1941, they had met in the ghetto of Slonim in Poland, where the Germans had forced all of Slonim's Jews to live. Aaron was 19, Lisa 15. Both had survived a massacre that claimed the lives of more than 10,000 of Slonim's Jews. Aaron and his family by hiding outside of the ghetto, Lisa and her sister by finding shelter with a Polish Christian woman. In June of 1942, after another massacre in which almost all of Slonim's remaining Jews were killed, Lisa and Aaron escaped the ghetto together. They sought refuge in the Grodno and Vilno ghettos before escaping in 1943 to the Narocz forests of Belarus to join one of the partisan units. For 1 year, they took part in sabotage and armed combat missions against the Germans, tended to the wounded and the sick, stood guard in sub-zero temperatures and dreamt of going to Palestine, scoured for food, and sang partisan songs around the fire.
Das Lied geschrieben ist mit Blut und nicht mit Blei.
Not with lead was this song written, but with blood. It wasn't warbled in the forest by a bird, but a people, trapped between collapsing walls, with weapons held in hand. They sang this song. Revenge was a powerful motivator for survival.
We had had very strong emotions, and I didn't think twice to be able to go in a fight and if it would kill some of the Germans. And we felt that finally it came the time, and now we're the masters of the situation. And we had a chance to kill some Germans, we did.
In the war, this is really, regardless what your thoughts are about other people, it's either the Germans or us. And there was no question that all of us, by this time, lost all of our families. And there was such a tremendous pain that still was so fresh.
When their unit met the Russian army sometime in June of 1944, it was a day of mixed emotions.
Because when all these units came together, there were other people that we knew that were in different units. And, oh, my God, you survived. And, you know, you fell on people and kissing them and hugging them. But, you know, a lot of people at the very same time said, oh, but look at my parents, my sisters, my brothers. Nobody survived. I have absolutely no one.
But the war was not over. Russian commanders ordered all surviving partisans to the front. Aaron and Lisa secured a special permit that allowed them to return to Slonim briefly before they were supposed to join the rest of the partisans.
Well, when I came to my hometown in Slonim, I stayed there with only a few hours because immediately I found out that nobody's alive. And I couldn't find anybody. The only thing I met up with one Jewish fellow, and he was telling me that no Jews are here in the whole town. And we had a city or a town of maybe 20, 22,000 Jews, and here you come in, and nobody is there. It's indescribable. You're coming to, I don't know, you're coming like to a cemetery. You're not coming to any place, and it's very, very painful. It was one of my worst days coming in. And that's why I never went back, because the memories, what's left over, is unbearable. So you're better off you don't touch that ground.
Meanwhile, Lisa went to the house of the Christian woman who had provided shelter for her and her sister 3 years earlier.
So I went to tell her that I survived. So I came to her house. We knocked on the door. She opened the door. And I was so grateful that she was alive and that she still lived there. And she said, "You were a child when you left my house. You look so grown up." She kissed and hugged and cried because I told her my sister did not survive. She didn't know if there were any Jews at all that survived.
They didn't return to the front as ordered, but headed for Bialystok instead, a city that served as a center for refugees.
There was immediately a committee, and the joint distribution from America established a kitchen where survivors came and got food. And there were lists of people on the walls. Whoever survived signed his name, and he signed, "He's looking for families, looking for so-and-so." It was so beautiful to see the camaraderie, how people tried to help one another, and how people cried when they found somebody that they knew, not only relatives, but friends, remote friends, people that lived in the same town, in the same shtetl, and such. Now, some of the people that were us in the underground were in Bialystok, too. So everybody drifted. And your friends became your family. It was your extended family. You were like brothers and sisters. Whatever they had to eat, they shared with you. You did the same with them in clothes or in anything.
They got in touch with the Bricha, an organization formed by Jews who had survived the war. Its goal was to help other surviving Jews get out of Eastern Europe and into the West, from where they could ultimately make the illegal journey to Palestine. Aaron and Lisa became two of the hundreds of thousands of Holocaust survivors who were helped by the Bricha. First stop, Hungary.
We were taken to the magnificent synagogue in Budapest. We were provided there with lodging. Everywhere we went, we met the Bricha. The Bricha arranged it in such a way for us that we did not have to be on our own. So we felt very free in Budapest. We walked around, we were exploring. We even tried to go in into a restaurant to see what kind of food they eat and what is it like. But we didn't stay there long.
Next stop, Graz, Austria.
And from there, we had to cross part of the Alps.
On foot.
We had to go to Treviso, Italy. And we crossed the Alps. We had Jewish Palestinian guides. They were scouts helping us to cross. But you had a feeling you had somebody taking care of you. Yeah, it was a good feeling you had.
And also it was very exhilarating because some of the people, the guides that were doing it, were Palestinian Jews that came from Palestine. Who would ever think that people from the ghetto will meet up with Jews from Palestine? And the idea and the thought was so tremendous, you never thought about the danger.
On the other side of the Alps, Members of the Jewish Brigade, part of the British Army, waited with trucks and food. Lisa and Aaron went from Treviso to Bologna to Modena to Florence. In Florence, they began receiving packages with food and clothes from American relatives.
You didn't need much.
We didn't need. I mean, our needs were just minimal. We enjoyed the freedom, the beauty of the country and the people, and it was warm. You didn't freeze, and it was beautiful.
After several months in Florence, in the spring of 1946, they moved to Rome, stayed with an Italian family, got married in Rome's majestic synagogue, learned Italian, and enjoyed life in a big city.
We were introduced to art, going to museums, then we were introduced to opera. All of a sudden we liked opera and music. We used to walk around during the evening, during the night. It was a free place for us. We used to go to sleep 2-3 o'clock every morning, stop in cafes. We didn't have the money to spend the cafe, so we stayed outside and listening, and it was a joyful time. It was a very joyful time.
When they received requests from American relatives to come to the U.S., at least for a visit, before going to Palestine, they agreed.
And finally, we sort of were approaching New York. The ocean wasn't so rough. And Aaron came down and he said, go down and come out. Maybe it's so many people already are out, looking out.
People are getting dressed up.
And people, oh yes.
People,
yes.
Whatever they had, they got dressed up. And here we are coming and we are seeing the shores. That's the evening, so you see the lights. And then you see, after you come closer, and you see the cars, one after the other, going. That was like a miracle. That was something like, we saw movies before, but that was something like from, we couldn't believe that's happening. You're coming to the shores of New York.
It was a huge place, with thousands, really hundreds of people. To me, it seemed like a whole city came down. Maybe there were other boats too that arrived. And my family in New York, my father had two brothers and a sister in New York, and they came to meet us.
Two aunts, my aunt and your aunt.
Aaron's aunt from Indianapolis, my aunt Blanche from Chicago, and also my cousin that I knew that left for the United States in 1938. Came
to the
so
boat.
So many of the relatives. Can you imagine when you came from such devastation where everybody was killed and you fell into arms of your own blood, or your own relatives that just were so warm and so wonderful? Until this day, I think about it. I think about it, how wonderful it is to have family.
Did they speak about their wartime experiences?
Do you know, in New York, we only told them when they asked about people, if they survived. We only told them that. They knew that we survived, and sort of in a short way, we told them that there were steps of survival, that Christians helped us, that we were in the underground, liberated, and then we had to go through borders, but not in detail, no.
They were afraid to hurt our feelings. They thought if we'll start talking about it, they don't know how we're going to react.
Exactly.
So they felt better, they're not going to touch it. Whatever you want to say, you'll say. And then little by little,
You revealed some of it,
but they didn't press to anything, and we weren't maybe so anxious to tell them all the details. But soon they found out.
And they kept on telling it over and over again. This is America. this is America, this is America. Things will be different here, things will be good.
After family visits in New York and Indianapolis, they decided to settle in Chicago, in a Jewish community that was proud of them. Part of that pride stemmed from Aaron and Lisa having spent much of the war not in a concentration camp, but fighting with a partisan group.
In fact, I have to tell you that some survivors have told me that the neighbors, and Jewish neighbors, not Christians, Jewish neighbors, would not let their children play with the survivors' children. And they felt very bad about it, very bad about it. They were not accepted. But because at that very early, not so much was known, and not so many people spoke up, so there was a feeling that the people that were in the concentration camps, there was something, they survived, I don't know, doing what? Eating other people's flesh, or they're terrible, or I don't know, I really lack to come to the bottom of it, why? But it's the truth, that's the way it was. I did not meet up with it at all. I did not meet up. And in fact, everywhere that we went, we were a sort of quote-unquote like elite of survivors.
Trying to make a living. At first, Aaron worked in a steel mill where the pay was good, but the co-workers unsympathetic.
Yes, yes, yes. They say, why are you here? Why didn't you go to Palestine? And then in all different kind of remarks. Make fun of it, make fun of the guest chambers. And you could feel it. I had a hard time to cope with that. I used to say back, but to a certain extent, you were afraid. You were afraid, so you couldn't start up a fight. You're the only one Jew in the whole shop. You didn't have any sympathy with anybody to stand up for you. I had a hard time to cope with that. And I didn't stay there long. It's about 6 weeks I worked. And I said I didn't come to America to live anti-Semitism.
Temporary jobs as a shipping clerk.
And all minimum wage, 90 cents. And I could see it's no future.
Doing piece work in a sweatshop, sitting next to a friend, but with no time for talk.
This picture I can never forget in my life. Here's 100 degrees, flies all the way around, and I'm working in a machine, and he's working in a machine, and here's fly, he goes like this, and sewing with the machine. I say, come on, it's not for me. He doesn't have a minute time to talk to me. He said, we'll talk later. It was 12 o'clock. I went out for lunch and never returned. I never came back. I say, it's enough for me. You're still dreaming by going back to Palestine, going to Palestine. But now that was 47. The borders were still closed. You couldn't get a visa to go to Palestine. Because the state was born in 1948. So by that time, we were already a year and a half, 2 years living in America. So little by little, you get used to it, and you stay, and you stay.
And then in 1949, our son was born. And then in 52, our other son was born.
Seizing opportunities and ready to take financial risks, Aaron tried to establish a business, dry goods store, army surplus store, sporting goods store. Finally, in the early 1960s, a men's clothing store brought financial security and satisfaction. The store, Howard's, was named after their oldest son. Lisa raised the children.
When the children were little and small, I felt that my place is home with them. If we live to have children, I really felt I have to be with them and protect them and give them absolutely everything, all the love and affection. that I too received as a child. I grew up in a loving family that, with a grandma with all the love and an aunt that lived with us. And when they started going to school, I became involved in the PTA, and I wanted to know exactly how they were doing and how they were doing and what. And then they were going to Hebrew school. There were sessions of driving them to school and driving them to school. We always try to instill them with positiveness. I mean, what kind of a positiveness when you talk about killing and guessing and maiming and all this? We come to it and to say that with all of these terrible things that went on, there are still good people. Look, there are two outstanding Christians that saved your parents. So it's you sort of have to search. Within searching, you will find good people and try to emulate the kind of good people that you can find. The second thing that they learned from us, what is it that's important in life? That it's not material things. And I say, look, your father and I came to America and we picked up. We got educated on our own, even though we had help from the family and everything. And we lived to see the state of Israel established, which to us is a tremendous, tremendous source, really an emotional source, psychologically and everything. It's great. Don't despair. Handle right. Don't overdo that everything is a tragedy, that the ceiling is falling. Look, I say, what we went through. Not because I expect you to do it. See the positiveness in everything they do. They're positive people.
All three sons became medical doctors, neurologist, internist, and plastic surgeon.
And neither Aaron nor I ever felt guilty for surviving. And other people have a guilt. I don't know why, but they do.
Many times we talk to each other and we wonder why.
Why people are
why
guilty.
Why people feel guilty. I don't know.
But it's a fact.
But it's a fact.
I know that my parents, most of all in their life, wanted us to live. If only I could tell my mother that I survived, how happy she would have been to know that I survived. My father, too. That's all he wanted us is to live. So why should I feel guilty?
Speaking about their experiences and teaching the Holocaust to young people has become the overriding passion in their lives. Both are active members of the Holocaust Memorial Foundation in Illinois. Both are sought out as speakers about the Holocaust and especially the Jewish resistance. In 1993, the Dermans went on a trip to Poland, accompanied by over 100 high school students.
Friday morning, we went to Lublin. We went to the famous yeshiva in Lublin. And then from there, we went to Majdanek. On the way, the children just came from America, you know, with these big boom boxes, throwing candy and having fun, which, I mean, it's expected of teenagers. Why not? Do you know, when we left Majdanek, it was such a silence on the bus. They were cradled in their heads, in one another, in each other, without a sound. They were so taken and so affected. And they were different people. They were different people when they left. They became so caring, such wonderful people while we were there, how they cared for us, and how they truly lived through this entire episode with us.
We went to Auschwitz, Majdanek, and Temblinka. And we gave him lectures for 5 days. And we spent all the time with them. And we felt that we accomplished something. It was worthwhile for the kids to learn, especially for survivors.
Today, Aaron and Lisa remain close to their sons and 8 grandchildren, and they continue to teach about the Holocaust, guiding classes through the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum, for instance. Here, children help search for the name of the second Pole who helped Lisa and Aaron during the war.
He found him. This is the Christian that saved 9 Jews, Aaron and myself among them. And when we'll come back here again, I will tell you how he saved me. Tell you, for you to remember, righteous people, that risk their lives to save others. Why did they do it? Why did they do it? Because they were moral people. And also, the moralist of the moral, yes. And also they followed their heart, what their conscience told them to do, not what the Nazis told them to do. Love thy neighbor, do not kill. And they did it at a great risk of themselves. You will hear how what it took for them, for him to save us. And I hope that you, as you are growing up, will emulate these people, will walk in their footsteps and be righteous people. And together we will maybe be able to build a better world. And when I won't be here no more, that you will remember what I told you, and you will be my survivors and my people to speak on my behalf. A promise.
Yes.